Welcome to Predictable with Stu. Go to predictableshow.com. If you want to get all connected with the Substack, we have a lot of written pieces that are kind of prepped and ready to go as we're getting ready to launch all of this stuff. We're entering into primary season. It's going to be a big season for us here at Predictable, and of course, going into election season as well. If you are on this channel, maybe on YouTube, and you were here, subscribe for Stu Does America. Let me just quickly tell you that Stu and Dave Do America now exists. It's a thing. It's a thing we've been doing for a couple of weeks now, and we would love for you to join us over at that channel. It's Stu and Dave Do America. Search YouTube, search podcast, do the things. It's with comedian Dave Landau, who's really, really funny. I think you'll like the show quite a bit, and it's over on Blaze TV as well. Now, we have a primary night tonight. Yeah, I will say it's kind of boring. I will say it's mostly boring. It's probably a bad way to sell this segment to you, but there are, of course, important elections going on, important things going on, and a lot of that ties into the prediction market scene. So I want to give you a little bit of background on these elections, give you some of the prediction market info as well. Where do things stand? What are we looking for going forward? We have that coming up. We have a bunch of stuff as it relates to oil prices and Iran and prediction markets, as well as, kind of a market I kind of like. We'll end the show with today. We're going to start, though, with seven midterm elections on Tuesday. We'll test Trump's power in Indiana. This is the way the media is kind of talking about this particular election. Understandably so, because really, again, there's not a ton of drama in these individual races, particularly the ones that you can go on a Kalshi or a Polymarket or a Predictit and look at. There is a good piece from Decision Desk HQ, which is a great source for election data, especially if we want to really dig in deep. 16 races to watch in Indiana and Ohio. There's a lot there. The sort of like main headline here when it comes to this election is this sort of revenge thing. This and the way this all played out, if you go back a while, we started out with this redistricting process. And again, I get into the middle of these sentences and I'm like, this is the least sexy topic possible. Let me talk to you about redistricting, but not the main redistricting, the revenge tour. The redistricting revenge tour is what we're talking about today. So Trump wanted these states to redistrict their states, in between the census to get more seats for Republicans leading into the midterms. Understandable motivation there. Texas did it, then California responded, then it became this sort of all-out, let's find all the seats that we can find. One of the states Trump looked to was Indiana, and there they needed to pass this new redistricting map, which would theoretically net Republicans two seats. A lot of people talk about these things as if they're very, very formal. We now want two more seats for Republicans, and now we will get them. It's not the way redistricting works. What you do is basically draw a bunch of lines to try to guarantee your side a few more seats. Does that work? A lot of times it doesn't. And we are seeing examples of this play out as this election looks a little shaky for Republicans in certain places, particularly with minority voters. There's an issue potentially where you redraw these districts and wind up blowing some districts you already had. There's some risk of this in Florida. Do I think it's going to happen in Florida? No, I think it's probably going to improve the situation in Florida, but there is some risk there. So seven of these Republicans were out there saying, hey, we don't want the redistricting in Indiana. It winds up not passing in Indiana. And so this angers Trump. Trump says, basically, I'm going to get revenge on you guys. We're going to get opponents in these primaries to take you all out. He's been able to basically arrange and endorse seven different candidates in some of these races. District 1, District 11, 19, 21, 23, 38, and 41. Spread around the state, as you see here on this helpful map, which shows you that these are all pretty red districts, honestly. They'll probably be red after this. But there's a couple of interesting matchups in here. Couple to highlight. Linda Rogers is one kind of seen as more of a moderate and is being at least promoted that way by her opponent, Dr. Brian Schmeltzer. It's going to be that's one that they think Rogers will hold on to. Another is the Jim Buck story is kind of interesting. Jim Buck is the incumbent going against the challenger, Tracy Powell. Powell is the Trump-backed insurgent candidate, if you will. Buck is kind of one of the main targets of this push to try to oversee, to take him out. What's interesting about it is he was going to retire. He's like 80, which is, by the way, I don't know if you know this, Jim, way too early to retire in politics. 80, you're a spring chicken. You're like the youngest person in Washington, D.C. But he wanted to retire. And then this whole redistricting fight came up. He decided to stay in. That race is an interesting one to watch. And there's a bunch of these. Now, I will say, there's not a ton of markets on this stuff in at that level. Really, the markets for these races tend to go a little bit at a higher level for congressman or Senate or governor. And that's what we're going to focus on for most of this. But let me give you some of these races and just kind of look, give you a quick glance at these other races when it comes to the redistricting situation in these districts. These all are all bright red districts, the closest one being District 1, a 7.2 margin in 2024 for Republicans. This ranges up from about 13 points in that Linda Rogers district all the way up to, you know, over 30, you know, 8 points in District 19. So most of these are going to wind up being Republican seats. The question really is, which Republican do you want? And before we move on from this, I just want to say how central of a strategy this could be and should be for Republicans in certain situations. I'm not going to necessarily, like, I don't like the whole redistricting, and you get rid of this. I don't like the whole redistricting approach here. I wish it wasn't a thing that was happening. I wish it wasn't a thing where every state is trying to redistrict on overtly partisan lines. The Supreme Court basically said you can't do it on racial lines, so they want to do it on these sort of partisan lines. Once the district redistricting wars start, as the Clone Wars once did, you really can't stop pumping out clones. You better do it, because this will be a thing where the other side's going to take advantage of you. So everyone's going to escalate this to the max. The reason why Republicans sort of like this is if they can get all these states to redistrict, and I do think a state like Indiana is possible after this, but I also think blue states like Illinois are possible. Once you do this and you start going to the everyone goes balls to the wall, basically, you wind up Republicans have more room. They have more room to gain from redistricting than Democrats do, because Democrats have been doing it for a long time. They've been gerrymandering for a very, very long time, and they've done it better than Republicans have. That's the truth. You can see this throughout. A ton of blue states have almost zero Republican representation. So as this all plays out, I wish this wasn't the case, okay? I wish it wasn't a situation where these redistricting was going on. But stepping back from that for a minute, one of the core approaches, if you happen to be a conservative Republican, to go on, and if you're going to have an approach here when it comes to primaries, it should be targeting weaker, more moderate Republicans in bright red districts and states. There's no reason for mediocre Republicans to be in bright red states. If you know you're going to win, and again, no, I'm putting in air quotes. Republicans have lost, races in places like Alabama, right? If the wrong candidate's in there, you can lose. But if you look at a state which is basically a safe state, if you're looking at a district that is basically a safe district, you should get the most conservative person possible into that district. Some of that is happening here. You know, some of it is just sort of revenge for the redistricting thing, but some of those candidates are actually better than the candidates that preceded them. And if you can do that, if you can improve in a bright red district, you should do that. What you don't want to do is throw some hardcore conservative in a race that they're going to lose. When I say hardcore conservative, usually that is with air quotes. I don't necessarily mean positive, or I don't even mean policy-wise. A lot of times this just goes back to, you know, is there a scandal? Is there a weak candidate? Is there a candidate that can't talk? Is there a candidate that, you know, may have murdered a school child 12 years ago that we're just discovering now? Those types of things tend to weaken a candidate. So you don't want to throw anybody in there, but you should get the most conservative policy person in those situations if it's at all possible, and that person can win. Get the most conservative person for the election that they are in. That is winnable. You don't want to always go with the most conservative person, at least when it comes to this generic left-right thing. I would rather have a strong conservative who can articulate the policies rather than some, you know, milquetoast person. So that's just me. By the way, in Ohio, let's go through a little bit of Ohio. Ohio has the Senate race. But there's no real mystery here in the primaries. Husted versus Sherrod Brown. Sherrod Brown's going to win the Democratic side. Husted's going to win the Republican side. Now, this is for a special election to replace J.D. Vance, who you may have heard was elected vice president of the United States. Yeah, I know. That's a big thing. Husted was put in as the appointee. And now he is running to get there. Sherrod Brown, of course, former Democratic senator, lots of name recognition, one of these guys that could actually win in a state like Ohio. And I would say if the Republicans are going to lose the Senate, this is a must win. It's not exactly a must win, like the Democrats could win the Senate without Ohio, but this is one of their better chances in a race they really shouldn't win. And I do think that likely Ohio still winds up going red at the end of the day. It is important, though, to understand that this is a race that you can't take for granted, especially with a guy like Sherrod Brown, who's had some statewide success in a place like Ohio. In the gubernatorial race, you have another relatively close race. Vivek Ramaswamy, though, is going to cruise to victory tonight. Amy Acton is going to cruise to victory tonight as well. Both of those cases are pretty much sure things when it comes to the poll. Let me give you this one as well. This is when you're talking about the House races that are kind of up there right now. These are the Democratic races that these are seats that the Democrats hold that were in races that Trump won, in districts that Trump won. So there's not a ton of them. They range from a Republican plus 16 district all the way down to a Republican 1.8% district. If you see the line, though, it's about 10 points. That's where most experts are seeing this right now. If you're in a Republican district that you won by 10 or more, it's probably leaning your way, or maybe even is a solid Republican race. If you are in a race where Trump won by 10 or less, those races tend to be leaning Democrat. One little asterisk I will show you on the fourth race down there is Henry Cuellar, who looked like he might be going to prison, and then Trump pardoned him, and then Cuellar ran anyway. I think there was an understanding, or at least a belief by Trump, that he'd get out of that race if he got pardoned. Instead, he just took advantage of the pardon, stayed in the race, and now looks like he might hold the seat, which is just completely typical. Let me give you a sense as to what we have going on right now in a bunch of these primary races. As I said, it's not that sexy, but there are places for you to take advantage. Indiana 03, this is Stutzman, the guy that we like. He is somewhere around a 95% chance to win today. That one from Kalshi in Indiana 05. Victoria Spartz running again in the mid-90s when it comes to your chance to win. Indiana 07 is a 95.6% chance for Patrick McCauley to win. No big surprises here, even less a surprise as you get to these bigger races, because there's not a ton of liquidity and not a ton of action in those smaller races. When you talk to Ohio gubernatorial race, Vivek Ramaswamy, as I said, he's going to cruise to victory. Yeah, 99.3% chance to win. So that seems pretty good. When you go to the more interesting races, when it comes to tonight's primary, like Ramaswamy, is he going to win? Yes. And is there something that you can get out of that? Let me stop here first. Because there is something that is worthwhile for you when it comes to prediction markets, when it comes to increasing your bankroll a little bit for future action in these primaries that are coming. And they're going to come fast and furious now. And we're going to have a live stream tonight going over the results of these. And you can take some advantage here. Now, this is going to sound kind of boring, because it is kind of boring. But some of the best financial decisions you make are boring. You know, Warren Buffett is like a really boring guy. At least he appears that way from the outside. I've never met him. And unless he's making a really dumb point about tax rates and a secretary, he's just kind of a dullard, right? Like he's a very rich dullard. He's not driving around Lamborghinis. He's not doing it the sexy way, right? He's doing it the boring way. And that's his charm. When you look at his 10, I was just in a restaurant the other day that has his 10 pieces of investment advice on the wall. It was Jimmy John's, I think it was. And yes, there's all sorts of advice on the walls of Jimmy John's. But when you're in Jimmy John's, look at that, read it. It's boring. It sets up a very boring approach. The reason I bring that up is because right now, if you have money in your checking account, it's going to get you, I don't know, 0.1% probably annually every year. Not very sexy, okay? If you have money in a savings account, maybe you're getting 2, 3%. There's some really aggressive pieces, you know, where you might be able to get to 4%. There's other ways. You put it in the stock market, you can get to 10% annually, maybe like on a year-to-year basis, with obviously ups and downs throughout that process. These races that we're talking about are, many of them, very much sure thing. Like Stutzman's going to win his race. Okay, that's going to happen tonight. I would invest on that, and I have. Okay, and you might say, well, wait a minute, we were just talking about this, like 96% chance. What's the point? Well, it's happening tonight. If you can get 4% in a day, it's pretty good. Not to mention, if you're in a Kalshi account, for example, they're going to give you 3% annually anyway, which is what you'd make if you were sticking it in an account. Now, there's some FDIC insurance differences. Granted, Kalshi pretty financially stable right now. So I'm not concerned on that particular standpoint. I guess my argument here is, if you have some money in your account and you're sitting around, you're like, well, what should I do with it? I've got an election. I want to put this money into the House race that's going to happen in November. A lot of times the smarter play is to keep it on the sidelines and pop it into races like this, where you are in a sure thing, quote unquote, environment. Now, look, every 95% chance, every once in a while, you're going to have one that does not work. I would argue none of those races that I just described are 1 in 20 type situations that you're going to lose. This race for Ramaswamy, Ohio Ramaswamy rate was 99.3% chance. You say, well, what's the point of that? Well, Ramaswamy's going to win tonight. He's going to win his primary. That is as near a certainty as you can find. And that's a 0.7%, you know, whatever it is, 0.7%. That's not a great return. But when you're talking about, you know, maybe you can get it at 98 or 99%, a 1 or 2% return in an evening is not necessarily the wrong thing to do, as long as you don't throw this around all the time. One of the terms you'll hear used in prediction market talk is called bonding. And basically what that means is people will invest in something early on. It will go up to 98-99% when it's sure that it's going to happen. And then people who have those positions want access to that cash. They want to exit those positions and say, hey, you know, I don't want to wait another month for this to go, or another week for this to go from 99 to 100 and I'm going to get 1%. I want to put that money somewhere else. So they will sell out of their positions at 99. A lot of people will say, well, this is a sure thing. I'm happy to come in at 99 and take that 1% off your hands. I'll give you access to your cash back, right? I'll buy at 99%. I'll wait for it to resolve at a dollar later on. Yeah, sure, it's 1% on your money, but you can stack those gains over a year if you're doing that once a week. Kind of looks a lot better than a checking account, doesn't it? So that is where you can really like take things that are relatively sure, very good possibilities of happening, and stack very, very small gains in very short periods of time, giving you an annual percentage yield that looks pretty darn good. Now, if you want to get a little bit riskier, if you want to look into something with a chance of more gains, you could still find those things tonight. Let me give you an example of that. Ohio Republican governor primary Vivek Ramaswamy vote percentage. So this is not whether he will win or not. It's how high he will get. Most of the polls show him in the high 60s to low 70s, with some of his kind of lower named, opponents who will almost definitely not win the race. You know, they can get into the high single digits, the low double digits, maybe 15, 16% even. Will that be enough to keep him, Ramaswamy, around, 70, 80%. There's a bunch of markets listed here where you can go in and invest as to what you think that rate will be. Now, one interesting thing, and this is something that you'll learn looking around these markets if you're interested in these things, there is a position for Vivek Ramaswamy to win under 50%. Now, if he wins under 50%, there's a chance he's going to lose that election, of course, and that would be very small percentage that it would happen. However, there's also a chance he could win the election, right? And still be under 50% if his other opponents somehow got higher. The bottom line here is to say that there's more value in his under 50% to say, no, he won't be under 50% than there is whether he will win. And I think there's almost no chance he's going to be under 50%. So Bottom line is, a lot of times you can look around and find multiple markets that are looking at the same thing and find a slightly better advantage there than in other places. Again, this isn't the sexiest election night, I got to be honest with you. These are not major things that are up for debate. But if you want to say, hey, will Vivek Ramaswamy clear 80%? It's about a 50-50 chance. I think it's now rising a little bit above that. Most people think he may actually clear 80% in this particular election. The projection from everybody putting their positions in has him at about 75% chance, or 75% of the vote. Will he get over 80? If he does a little bit better, if you think he's going to do a little bit better than people think, then you go over 80 and you could actually double your money today. So that is another one to look at. Anything else important I should get to here? Let me just give you a couple of overviews here before we move on to other topics. Which party will win the U.S. House? All the redistricting from the Supreme Court has given you the slightest difference here. Remember, we talked about this race at the beginning. We go back all the time where it was at the 50s and 60s, but recently we've talked about this race at about an 85% chance for Democrats to win the House. Again, that might not make you happy. It does not make me happy, but I do believe it is appropriately priced. That number has slid down slightly from 85 to about 80% since the Supreme Court ruling. So what we're seeing here is a market that's telling us, hey, we think there's going to be a change in this market. We think there's going to be a change in the chances of Republicans winning the House. We think that there is going to be a change in the number of seats Republicans win because of all the redistricting on top of the Supreme Court ruling, which is going to make states like Louisiana need to redraw their districts. We recognize that as a market. And what we think as a market is that that's not going to be enough for Republicans to still hold the House. They have a better chance to do it, but it's still at an 80-20 situation. So a four out of every five elections, Democrats would win. That's what the markets are saying right now. You disagree with this, you go on Kalshi, you go on Polymark, you go and predict it, and it's very easy to find a place to make big-time money. If you think Republicans are going to win there, for every 20 cents that you invest, you'd win a dollar. Okay, so 80 cents profit on a 20 cent investment, that's good eating. If that's what you think is going to happen. I frankly don't at this point. I would need more evidence to the contrary to convince me. But that is where we are right now. And honestly, I Democrats start getting into the 70s. I'm going to start looking at, potentially increasing my position again. Because I don't think it's that. I think probably low 70s I'm back in. I was buying back in the 50s and 60s quite a bit. It's been up to 85. If it continues to fall, I'd be at least interested to look at it. On the other side, we're seeing a little bit of a bump in the Senate, and there's not really a great reason for that. The redistricting thing did not affect the Senate race, but which party will win the U.S. Senate? It was at one point, 75-80% Republicans, dropped down to about 60% Republicans, held there for a long time until it narrowed relatively recently and became a tie race at the beginning of this year, maybe February, and has bounced back and forth since. Republicans now taking a 54-46% chance to win the Senate. Obviously, that's a massive situation, particularly when you're talking about having very old Supreme Court justices. It's important for the Senate to remain in Republican control if you're conservative and that's what you think. If you want Democrats, obviously winning that is a major deal as well, maybe the biggest part of this, because the Senate is something that Republicans should win. We have a Senate preview that kind of explains all this up at predictableshow.com. You can go check that out. It's good reading to get you set for this season. So that's where we are tonight. We're going to do a live stream tonight on Substack. I think on Substack, maybe on YouTube too. I don't know. You can check that out by going to predictableshow.com. Join us tonight. We'll walk you through. If there are any surprises tonight, we'll look at that Vivek Ramaswamy vote percentage market a little bit. We'll look at how this is affecting the races going forward, because if Republicans have a big night tonight, if Democrats have a big night tonight, you can see the overall race switch a little bit as well. We'll talk about that tonight on the live stream. I don't know what time we're going to start exactly, but as the votes start coming in, we'll get in. We'll get you up to date as to what is happening. And if there are any opportunities, sometimes there are. Sometimes you'll get a situation where, Republicans get a or Democrats get a big burst early, and you look at what is remaining in the vote and you say, wait a minute, this is going to come back the other way. there's sometimes opportunities in markets to take advantage of that. So this hopefully is kind of telling you where we stand and where we can maybe profit as well in the coming days and weeks. So we'll join you tonight, predictableshow.com. We have more coming up with oil and another market that I kind of like. I'll talk to you about that next. Welcome back to Predictable, predictableshow.com, and it's Predictable Show on all sorts of social media. Go there, follow the show. We got all the stuff that we're going to give you. So do that. Do those things. Whatever those things are, go and do them. A couple of markets I want to kind of show you to give you a picture as to what the world is really thinking right now. Because we are currently, I don't know if you've heard this, in a war with Iran. And that war is kind of on, kind of off. I don't know what's happening. The Strait of Hormuz, kind of open, kind of closed. There's a lot of uncertainty out there. And there's sort of a fear of a big oil spike. There's a fear of the war escalating out of control. And there's also, you know, people who want this thing to be over. Remember, this was kind of sold to us as a multi-week operation. That's kind of how it was described at the beginning multiple times by the president and other officials who said, you know, we go in there, we get this over with, and it should be done soon. We're kind of past those initial deadlines anyway right now. And now we're looking forward to see what could we expect going forward. Let me show you a couple things that the markets are saying right now. Here's a Polymarket market. U.S. and Iran with a permanent peace deal by May 15th, May 31st, June 30th, or December 31st. Now, quite clearly, with a 4% chance by May 15th, only about a week and a half away, not very likely, according to these markets, only a 4% chance. By the end of the month, it goes up to about a 14% chance. By the end of June, a 37% chance. I got to say, good chunk of me thinking I might go on that market and go no on that one. I don't know. I'm not that optimistic. And then by the end of the year, a 65% chance. Again, a permanent peace deal. Now, I don't have the rules of this particular market printed out in front of me, but a permanent peace deal is a pretty high bar, and I want to read those rules specifically to see what ticks that off, because you never know. Sometimes it's just people saying they've got a permanent peace deal, and that will check the box. If so, makes me a little bit, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that peace deal is real. Right. But usually a peace deal is, you know, that's a serious situation. You're signing documents, and that's usually what that means. What the markets are saying here is, look, we don't think this war is going to go on forever, but it's not going to end anytime really soon. You know, less than a 50% chance by, you know, we're talking another couple months. The markets are saying we're skeptical of a deal, even if you go out to the end of June or at the beginning of May. So there's a lot of skepticism there. By the end of the year, we're over 50% to 65%. Markets are saying, hey, we think something's going to happen here. We think we'll get to a peace deal eventually, but I wouldn't expect it anytime soon. That's that market. By the way, one thing I love when it comes to prediction markets is when my opinion, my vibe, my position on a market coincides with me being able to hedge my life. Hedge my life is a very central part of my life. I've talked about this a bunch of times, and you'll hear it a million times here on Predictable with Stu. It's never a reason to take a position for investment gains. It is a reason to take a position, like, for example, as I've discussed, investing, hedging my life against a Philadelphia Eagles, let's say, Super Bowl victory. If I go against the Eagles, if the Eagles lose, that ruins my life for a period of time. But I get paid for that. That's hedging your life. Okay, that's a pure hedge of your life. Like, it's going to make me happy. If the Eagles win, I won't care about losing the money. If the Eagles lose, I'll be sad. I better get some money. That's how I look at it. That's a pure hedge. This is not a pure hedge. I have a real opinion, honestly, looking at this. I have some skepticism on those numbers. A permanent peace deal, again, pending on these rules in the description, June 30th, for a 37% chance. Like, I do not think there's a 37% chance of a permanent peace deal being done in the next 6 weeks. Like, I think that's really unlikely. And then when you talk about, I would put that more at like 5%. And then when it comes to the end of, you know, you're talking December 31st, end of the year, a permanent peace deal. Again, this isn't a standoff where we all kind of just say that we won and people stop firing at each other. We're talking about a permanent peace deal. I don't think there's a 65% chance of that by the end of the year. I think that might be 25%. So I like both of those no markets, that June 30th and the December 31st particularly. And honestly, 14% by the end of May kind of sounds delicious as well. So I'd be no on pretty much all of these markets. The other thing I like about this, just to give me a little added push, is the fact that if I'm wrong and I lose this money, we've ended a war. And I'm going to be pretty happy about a war being over. So there's a little bit of a hedging your life thing there that gives me a little bit of a bonus to get into one of these markets, which, you know, by the way, I probably will. Secondarily, here is, because we're telling a little bit of a story here, crude oil. Now, right now, we're sitting between $95 and $100 a barrel on this measure. Right now, this is what another poly market looks like. What will oil get to in May of 2026? So short-term oil prices, what's the peak or the bottom of where they will get to? Since we're between 95 and 100, you'll see the highest prices right around there. A 77% chance that it drops to some point at $95 a barrel this month, but a 92% chance it goes over 100. So a little bit more on the upside chance, but there will be some movement here going forward. But I want you to drop down a little bit. Will it drop down to $90 a barrel? There's a 60% chance, so still over, you know, a half. And will it go over $80 a barrel? Only a 22% chance. So they're saying, markets are saying, look, we don't expect any wonderful, glorious situation that's going to make oil drop to, you know, normal levels anytime soon, at least in the month of May. Going the other way, will it get to $110 a barrel? That's a significant increase, but only a 70% chance of that happening. But the real spike at $120 a barrel, only a 36% chance of that happening. What are the markets saying here? They're saying, look, we expect some movement. We expect some volatility, but we don't expect either a solution or a massive inflammation in the next several weeks. Put those two things together, and what are we learning? What we're seeing here is that they don't expect an oil crisis anytime soon, and we don't expect nirvana anytime soon, right? What we expect is more of the same, more plotting, more consistent sort of tension without a massive increase or a massive decrease in that tension. We're going to continue kind of on the same path for the foreseeable future. That's what both of these markets are telling you together when you kind of piece them together and see the story. Now, what does that mean? That doesn't mean we can't know for sure what the new Ayatollah is going to do or what President Trump's going to do. We could see this go out of control. We could see it going in a bunch of different directions. But that is what there's no oil crisis on your doorstep right now, at least as far as the markets believe. That's a good thing. There's no nirvana ahead of us. We, when you look at prediction markets, what are they telling us? They're predicting a future that looks a lot like what we have right now, at least for the coming weeks and months. When will that change? The markets seem to think by the end of the year, probably will change, but we might not see a massive drop off in oil prices anytime soon. And we get into the summer, you start to have the normal oil pressures that could make them rise even more. So, you know, there's a concern there. We've talked about how to offset your oil prices and gas prices when it comes to prediction markets. We can get into that a little bit more as well. But that's where we stand as far as foreign affairs go. We'll be back with a market I kind of like next. It's predictableshow.com to go and get on the Substack. We also have a live election special coming up tonight, going through some of the results in the primaries in Indiana and Ohio. So join us there. We'll look for maybe a couple of markets where we can cash in on what's going on in the world and what's affecting you on a day-to-day basis. I mean, politicians have been making money off of you for long enough, so maybe you can make some money off of them. Just a little baby goal we have here on this particular program. And in that vein, let me give you a market. Here's one I kind of like. GameStop is making a $56 billion bid for eBay, hoping to rival Amazon. $55.5 billion is what they're offering pay for Amazon or for eBay, and they're trying to make themselves into this giant company. And of course, GameStop, you know, it's a video game. It's a place that sells video games. You know, it's a meme stock. It's gone through that whole process. It's been able to access certainly a lot of cash, and now they're going to try to buy eBay. Now, there's some synergy there, right, between eBay and GameStop. But, you know, GameStop not only has video games, has collectibles, has, you know, kind of, I would say, a pretty close branding connection with eBay in a way. But eBay's really, really big. It's a $55.5 billion offer. Do they have the cash to come up with it? And so there's a market out there. Will GameStop acquire eBay this year? There's a lot of stuff to think about. Usually these acquisitions take a long time to actually go through. So even if everything was going swimmingly right now, this is an unsolicited offer. They'd have to agree to the offer. It would have to go through the entire process. There'd probably be all sorts of legal challenges to it and God knows what else. Even if this was the smoothest thing in the world, I'm not sure I'd be confident they'd get this done by the end of the year. But I want to give you one more piece of evidence because I do have a position on this market. This is one I kind of like. Let me show you a clip of an interview with the GameStop CEO about this deal. Watch.
Sort of walk us through how you could get to that price and how it would work.
It's on our website. It's half cash, half stock. But the details are on our website.
Can you help? I've read them, but can you help our audience understand them?
Yeah, which part exactly?
Well, I think we can start with the idea that the market cap of GameStop is, call it, $11 billion. Mm-hmm. You have $9 billion on your balance sheet. Arguably, if you're providing effectively all of your stock and then the cash that gets you to 20, you have this letter from TD. That's another 20. We're now at 40, but we're still off by, call it, 16. And the 20, as far as I understand, while it's considered a highly confident letter, meaning TD saying they're highly confident that they would provide the financing, it's not locked financing.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
I hear you.
Let's see what happens. I mean, that's a great answer, first of all. And I like his approach to the media, frankly. He probably has a future as a talk show host. That being said, the entire value of his company is $11 billion. He's got another $9 billion in cash, so say $20 billion there. He's got a promise, not locked in, but a promise of another $20 billion in financing, which gets him to $40 billion. Which leaves him $16 billion short of the first offer he's making that they could obviously refuse. The problem with all of this is I don't think they're getting this done by the end of the year. That's what I'm going to say. So here's one I kind of like. Will GameStop acquire eBay this year? I'm going to go with no, which would be a 22% chance of that happening. So you'd be getting a 22-cent gain on every 78 cents you invest. Well worth it, I would say. And I think a return I'm pretty confident in after seeing that interview. Okay, predictableshow.com is the place to go to get on the Substack. Just put your email in there. We'll keep you updated with everything. We'll get you markets like that on a day-to-day basis. You'll also get the show there. We'll also have a live stream tonight to go through the election results. We hope you join us. Let's see what happens. Good night. We'll talk to you tomorrow.